You're listening to 9 Plus, a research podcast from SETU Ireland. Welcome to this episode of 9 Plus. My name is Rob O'Connor from the South East Technological University of Ireland. In this one, I'm speaking with two academics about the NTutor project, which is all about transforming the student experience in the technological university higher education sector as a whole. I have Ken McCarthy, the NTutor lead for SETU, and Dr. Tom Farrelly from Munster Technological University. I'll be honest with you, this was great crack to record. There's mighty banter between Tom and Ken. I just had to let them off. But don't think this isn't a serious conversation, though. We talk a lot about Tom's research around AI, generative AI, AI literacy, adoption models, and more. And there's also a good chat about GASTA, which is a presentation style developed by Tom. Now, GASTA is the Irish word or Gaelic word for fast. And I've seen this in action at conferences, and I've taken part in it myself. It's excellent. It's a strict 5-minute presentation style with severe mockery for those who go over their allotted time. It's particularly valuable as an afternoon session in a conference when people might be tired, and GASTA tends to bring the energy back up. So check out the show notes for links to items mentioned in the podcast. There's some great insights into topics around higher education on this one, so I hope you're both informed and entertained.
Hello, my name is Tom Farrelly. I'm a senior lecturer and academic developer on the NTutor project, and I'm based in MTU Kerry. I'm also very interested in generative AI, and I think we need to be thinking about that and have published some work on that. And you may also know me, well, may or may not, as the GASTA master, the person who pushes the format of lightning micro talks that are known as GASTAs.
Brilliant. Hi, I'm Ken McCarthy. I am the SETU Institutional Lead for the NTutor project. More about anon, but NTutor is a collaborative project involving the 5 technological universities and the 2 remaining IoTs. I've been working in SETU and prior to that in WIT for the last 12 years now, which seems like almost a lifetime, but in my heart I'm probably still a used car salesman, so don't hold that against me.
12 years, it's 3 Olympics or three World Cups.
Something like that.
Right, lads, we've mentioned NTutor, so let's kind of just talk about what NTutor is. So we might start with that. So Ken, we'll go to yourself.
Sure, absolutely.
What is NTutor? Where is it coming from? You mentioned all the TUs and IoTs are involved in it. What is it? How does it work?
Yeah, so NTutor is notionally a 2-year project involved in digital transformation in the first instance, but going probably much broader and much deeper than that. What is unique about it is that it involves the entire technological sector. So it's the 5 new TUs, as I mentioned, and the 2 remaining IoTs in Dundalk and Dunleary. The project itself is funded to the tune of 40 million by the EU Next Generation Fund, and it's about recovery and resilience. It was looking to take some of the learnings from the pandemic and how we transitioned to digital education and maybe preparing for future interruptions. The project itself goes in the tagline Transforming Learning, and it's very much focused on teaching, learning and assessment. It has 3, although now 4 streams. Stream 1 is focused on student empowerment. Stream 2 is staff development. And stream 3 is building a digital ecosystem that, I suppose, supports the first 2 streams. Tom, who is here today, is also working on the project as an academic developer within one of the streams in MTU. The project itself, as I said, it's a 40 million project right across the sector. And it truly is probably the collaborative nature of it is much different to, you see lots of other projects that maybe involve 1 or 2 partners, but this is 7 partners, not necessarily trying to do exactly the same thing, but move, broadly speaking, in the same direction. So as well as those stream areas that I mentioned there, there are 6 thematic areas, and they go from digital transformation as a theme to education for sustainable development, equality, diversity and inclusion, universal design for learning. Remind me the other 2 again, Tom.
Employability.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. And they're is that six?
That's six.
Okay, yep. Good.
It's okay. We're not counting anyway. Yeah, so it's all right. You don't have to have your notes out in front of you. So you're okay.
I should have had.
No. Actually, I'm glad you don't, because I don't like that when somebody comes in and they're just reading off the thing. Yeah. And right, so Tom, you're with MTU,
yeah.
And you're based in Tralee normally, isn't it?
Normally,
right.
Yeah.
And you're travelling around under the hashtag, was it Intutor on Track?
Yeah.
Right now, could you explain what this is? Because I've seen photographs and a few videos of you this week as we're recording. We're recording here on the 1st of March.
Yeah.
Could you explain what Intutor on Track is?
Yeah, I suppose, well, over a conversation with Ken, one of the ideas was, I suppose, to try and have a cohesive or a thread running through, because all of the institutions, different sites and all are doing different events all week.
Oh, sorry, yeah, because this is Intutor Week.
So it's Intutor Week. So we, as a sector, we have committed to running events both face-to-face, fully online, hybrid. It's been an amazing range of events all week. But also, I suppose, to give it a bit more of a narrative or a story or a hook, we come up with the idea of Intutor on Track. And because one of the themes is sustainability, it's all by train travel. So I started off, I live in Kerry and I left Kerry on Sunday, was in MTU on Cork on Monday, and there was two SETU students came up and joined me on Sunday night and stayed in the campus in Cork on the Monday. Then they headed home, and then I had MTU students travel with me to TU Dublin. Then TU Dublin students travelled with me to Galway. And then the Galway students came with me to Limerick. And then we have two TUS students from Limerick who've travelled down with me last night. And so we finished the week here in SETU in Waterford. And as Ken said, he was going to leave the best to last. So and here we are here. So we've had an absolute ball. It's great fun. I turn up and there's all these photographers. And I was saying, like, this must be what it's like to be famous. And get fed and watered, and met the mayor of Waterford.
Met the mayor today,
yeah. So it's brilliant. And it's been absolutely wonderful.
Should I say, Tom, the mayor met you?
Well, okay, I won't disagree with that. And I'd say, yeah, he probably won't wash his hand for a week now after that. But no, it was great crack. Now, I really, really, and I've really, really enjoyed it. But the students have been great. I think one of the big things and really enjoyable things is, we travel, on the train a few hours every evening. So, we're chatting and I'm listening to their stories. I write a blog every evening on the train. So it's gone up on the Intutor website and, and sort of chatting over the meal then and then coming around. So I think that's been a big learning curve. I mean, one of the things was there was two students from TU Dublin. And they talked about one of the girls there, Taniola. She had done her Leaving Cert in 2020. So she was, I think, that worst year. Mm. Like, she'd no debs, no graduations, no first year experience of college, really, not even much second year. And that sort of legacy, and it was for me, I suppose, like, I'm a lecturer and I deal with students, but to actually spend a bit of time and really hear what it was like for them. And I think, as I said, I think one of the big things about Intutor is the student engagement. It's one of the big the strands running through it. And I think that's been an important thing, to actually bring the students with me, and they've been a big part of the week and all of the Intutor week. So, yeah, I mean, a bit of fun, but I'll be glad to get home to my bed now tonight, having travelled. But yeah, great fun. Intutor on Track.
And just on the students there, it's probably worth pointing out, each of the students that Tom has brought along with him are one of 100 Intutor student champions that were appointed at the start of the start of this academic year. And they've been sort of working across all of the campuses, across all of the thematic areas. And they'll be continuing on until the end of December this year. So they've been a great addition to life on campus and in helping us, I suppose, achieve some of the project aims and goals. And it is very much like about keeping the student at the centre of it. And I think even one of the things when we were walking over to meet you, Rob, that Tom was saying to me is that some of the cross-pollination of ideas that have come out of Intutor Week, with people maybe meeting people or going to events that they might normally have gone to and are going away thinking, oh yeah, I could apply that to this particular discipline. And that, I suppose is going to be some of the legacy of Intutor and Intutor Week and maybe leading on to future projects that are similar to it.
So the way you're describing that there, Ken, to me, is kind of making me think about an academic conference. Okay, now, as we all know, academic conferences can be great. Some of them can be not so great. But the best part is always the off the book stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm not trying to knock a keynote speaker or a good paper, a good presentation can be fantastic. But the best stuff is always what's said over a cup of coffee or having a pint or over a sandwich or a meal or whatever like that.
Yeah.
That's always where things generally start to happen. And I suppose maybe what I'm hearing with respect to this, and particularly with the student voice, is that maybe this is trying to give some of that to the students. Because one of the problems we have, certainly in the TU sector, is time and space. Like, we're packed, schedules are all the time. And I know we're talking very much at an undergraduate level here. I know it's a research podcast, and we will get to the research side of things. But it's, as you're just describing that, that's what's popping into my head. And I don't know what you're thinking about that, Tom. You're nodding.
No, I think you're absolutely right. It is those sort of accidental meetings, the opportunistic, call it what you will. And I think that's one of the things there. We're going to talk about it shortly, about the work on one of the papers I published. Mm. And I ended up doing that in collaboration with a guy from the University of Windsor in Canada, because I met him at a conference 18 months earlier. And then he invited me over to be a student or to be a research fellow. But they're the things there where you just chime with somebody. Yes, there may have been a speech and they've done their conference paper, but afterwards you kind of go, hey, Rob, actually, I really liked your paper. Can I have a chat with you? Here's my email. So I think all of those networking things there. And I think, with the students, is introduce them to that idea. I mean, we've had a few of the student champions with me this week are postgrad students, and you're sort of introducing them to that world of where you need to get your name out there. You need to look at those opportunities, because, okay, I might have a student who's from TUS, but you know what? 3 years from now, she might be a staff member in SETU or vice versa, or all of those things. Yeah. So I think those accidental, opportunistic, call them what you will, but I do sort of would say, certainly to anybody who's certainly a grad student, needs to be getting out there and looking for those opportunities. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, I suppose the serendipity, Tom. You know,
serendipity. I couldn't think of that word. I knew Ken would.
I learnt what it meant by accident. but yeah, it is those serendipitous sort of occasions that, and it is, and it's a nice thing to point out. And again, like that, I mean, even the nature of the Intuitor project, the fact that it's a collaborative project, that we're moving in the same direction rather than necessarily the exact same destination. And it's not as prescriptive as to say that we all have to do exactly the same things, but we do all have to work towards the same thematic areas. And even in that, a lot of it is learning from those who have gone before. So, you know, in SETU, we take great pride in the fact that we're probably... The leaders in terms of EDI, and we've been leaders in that space in the technological sector for some time, whereas others might be leading in terms of things like sustainability or universal design for learning, and it's about, you know, not having to reinvent the wheel the whole time and learn from those that have gone before. And I suppose, to tie it back to the research part, this is research in action, insofar as that, you know, when you start your research, the first thing you do is a literature review to see what the state of the art is. And this is a living literature review of, well, what's everybody else doing? And how can we learn from that? There's no point in, you know, starting from a blank page all of the time. You can't edit a blank page, but you can edit a piece of text.
You can't edit a blank page. My God, Ken, your words of wisdom are really impressive. That is actually good, though. I'm gonna rob that.
You rob all my best stuff.
Just in case you haven't realised, Tom and Ken are a bit of a double act. I'd like to talk about the...
That should have been Ken and Tom, though, by the way.
No, it's Tom and Ken. No, you had it right, Rob, first time.
Or is it Tom and Jerry? I don't know. Right, I'd like to talk about your recent paper, Tom, from October of 2023, and it's called, titled Generative Artificial Intelligence Implications and Considerations for Higher Education Practice. It's published in the Education Science Journal. So I've had a read of it. I mean, and I mean this with the greatest of respect. it's a paper that doesn't answer many questions but raises a whole lot more. Would you say that's a fair assumption?
That's a very fair assumption. I think I'm a little bit wary of, you know, when it comes to generative AI, that someone has, I have discovered the truth. I have, this is how we should would live our lives, so to speak. And yeah, I suppose it is so much changing. I mean, I wrote it, the paper, in collaboration with Nick Baker from the, he's the Director of Open Learning in the University of Windsor in Ontario in Canada. And he would feel very similar to myself in that we're just trying to offer guidance rather than, you know, we haven't come down from the mountain with sort of the Ten Commandments there like that. So I think, yeah, it's a fair thing. What fears me or whatever I is that I think there's a lot of, I sort of classified, do you remember in The Simpsons, oh, won't somebody think of the children? And I think that when it comes to Gen AI, I think, you know, senior management across all of the higher education sector maybe in some ways overestimate what Gen AI can do, or and certainly for a while I think people were overestimating the ability of some of the software, like I'm thinking Turnitin and some of this, and there was huge claims being made, and then we had all of these false positives and false negatives, and there was a story about that professor, I think he was in Texas A&M and he failed the whole class. So as I said, like, you know, and if you're going to, you know, potentially, you know, destroy a student's reputation or have them kicked off a course or God knows what the implications are, you know, you want to be really, really sure. And I don't think you can be sure. And I think one of the things we posed in the paper was the need for generative AI literacy. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, we proffered, a framework, but a sort of set of questions that I think lecturers need to consider. We had a particular sort of emphasis on the work with international students, because, as I said, like, you know, a lot of people don't realise the algorithmic biases which are in, because the problem with the Gen AI, it's a box in whaling, and people don't know what's actually in it. I was doing a session on with fellow lecturers now. It's just sort of saying about trying to illustrate what the biases were looking like. So what I set DALI a few tasks. Now, okay, it wasn't text, but it was the same principle. So I asked it, I said, I wanted university professors. And invariably, they were white, often baldy men with beards. So I was so close. If I had the beard, I would have been.
But, no, but you're right, though. You're right. And there's an interesting counterpoint to that, because I know there's been a lot of the companies have put a correction in. Now, bear in mind, all this stuff ages incredibly quickly.
Yes.
We're talking now on the 1st of March 2024. Okay. Yeah. There could be a completely different story come the 1st of June 2024. But there's a very recent case with Google's engine, the Gemini engine.
Gemini, yeah.
Where they tried to combat some of the biases. And have you heard about this,
yes,
about what
yeah.
was happening with the, so they were getting people to draw Nazis, and they were drawing Jewish Nazis and black Nazis, African Nazis, and all sorts of crazy stuff like that. So it's, I don't know what the answer is, but it's thrown up again a huge amount of complicated issues and questions around what these machines can do.
Yeah, you know, and as I said, like, it's one, it's only as good as the data set it's using as well there, like that. And you know, I think, like, simply just sort of saying, absolutely verboten, and, you know, you can't do it. I think we need to learn to work with it. I mean, Hazel Farrell of this parish here, like, she's done work and embraced, and, you know, because we talk about producing 21st century, you know, graduates and 21st century graduate skills. Well, part of that is living and working in a world with Gen AI. So there's no point in us pretending that we're, you know, we're turning out 21st century graduates, but it's actually, it's pre-November 2022. Mm-hmm. So as I said, I think, you know, when you look at, say, stuff that Hazel was doing, where she will get them to reflect on the inputs, or the outputs, I should say, and what's coming out and stuff, and then go away, and, you know, and the whole prompt engineering, these are all skills that you need. Mm. But as I said, I think the lecturing staff also need to develop that Gen AI literacy. My fear is, I think we are going to see a return to standard invigilated exams. Because if you take, I think up until the whole Gen AI explosion happened, there was a move a lot towards in higher education, like authentic assessments and trying to move to more, you know, sort of, I won't say complex, but, you know, more responsive assessments. And I think we're going to see a retrenchment if we're not careful.
Mm.
So I think the paper is as much a sort of discussion about what's out there and prompting some debate, because, as I said, there's no point in sticking our head in the sand.
Yeah, I will say that answers, Rob, can sometimes be overrated. good questions.
Oh, I'm not going to disagree with that. Yeah,
good questions prompt discussion. And just as you started on this, I suddenly remembered what the sixth theme of Intuitor was.
It
was
academic
integrity. Right?
Okay, all right. Okay.
As a shorthand, we were calling it AI before Gen AI became a thing. But I am glad to report that, and I did mention briefly that we do now have a fourth stream, which is about sustaining progress and impact. Within that fourth stream is the development of a national network for generative AI. Okay. And Hazel, who Tom mentioned already, is actually taking charge and leading up, and SET were taking the lead on that. And that'll be rolled out over this year. The other interesting project that's happening in the space of generative AI in tutorland, for want of a better word, is Rebecca Roper in IADT, together with Perry Scheer in ATU, is leading a project where they've appointed, I think it's 57, but I could be wrong on the number of 57, student champions who are people that are registered with the Disability Office, and they're looking at how generative AI can help them in their studies. So it's in combination with the what's now called the Gen AI N Cubed, and the N Cubed stands for N Tutor National Network, which has been led up or established by Hazel. That's looking at trying to look at generative AI without having that lens of academic integrity being that this is the sky is falling and
the moral panic of it all.
It's looking to see and not necessarily looking with completely rose tinted glasses either. Just I suppose you know the reality of it's here. It's not going away. It's not going to get any worse. As you were talking there about the biases, and you know this, Tom, because you were the editor of the journal, but going back to Hazel again, a paper that she wrote when she introduced the...
You're actually rubbing me thunder because I was going to talk about the journal as an editor.
I know, you wanted a journal in a second, but when she introduced the word Irish and asked for an output on an Irish context, it suddenly became Derby O'Gill and the Little People.
Whereas
up until that, it was relatively straight. So yeah, you do have to be conscious of. But look, it is going to get better, and it's most certainly is going to change things. How much remains to be seen, but it would be like we can't just pretend it doesn't exist.
No, I'm going to include a reference to your paper in the show notes, Tom, so if anyone wants to read it, because it is available in open access. So it is there, but just to kind of it's not all kind of just having a conversation. It is rooted in scholastic research. I mean, you reference a couple of other frameworks. Two ones that are particularly interesting. One is the Hilliers framework, which is a 2023 framework.
Yeah.
But then there's another one from 2021, and it's I'm going to say in and all, but I'm mispronouncing that.
Pronouncing it as well. And then we done an adaptation of that to take specific account of sort of the international dimension there, like that, you know. But and we were trying to keep it as current as possible. But yeah, and I have to say, just in terms of research, and this does sound a bit of a plug, it was only published October, November. I've never had a paper with 13 citations and so quick. So
right.
So it's certainly of the zeitgeist. Can I give another plug about other research stuff?
Of course you can, absolutely.
I'm one of the four editors of the Irish Journal of Technology Enhanced Learning, IJTEL, which is also a Diamond Open Access journal. We put out a call last year and we invited people to write papers using Gen AI. Now, we're not saying it is now the policy of Gen AI for the journal going forward. That's something we're going to have to discuss. But we said, rather than, as I said, this moral panic, so what we done is we invited people and there would be three parts. The first part, you would set out the context of what the topic is, give details of prompt engineering, why you're doing it, all of that. That's about 1,000 or so words. Then there's 2,500 words. You could have a policy paper, a review, a position paper, teaching practicum, anything at all, and generated by Gen AI. And then a final 1,000 or so words, a review, a reflection on the process. So what we wanted was, you know, if you're talking to people and you can say, you know, you're dealing with students, say, well, look at here. So we got 29 papers in, and we eventually published after review 20 papers, full double blind review, the whole all of that. But what we want to do is, rather than, as I said, you know, won't somebody think the children, let's look at how the pods and how they actually use it now. And I do think it's certainly, if someone thinks you're going, I think some people think you just say, write me a 5,000 word essay, and it won't do that. And I think, like, you still have, the good students will have to use it together like that. But, you know, in terms of using they're genuine academic papers. It's a, as I said, it's a double blind review papers and stuff, but we have embraced it. So that's another thing I just wanted to give a shout out. So yeah, I think that's something. Hazel had a paper in that one, yeah.
But even as we're discussing here, I'm even thinking about the language that we're using. It's even, for example, describing Gen AI as it. But generative AI is just a suite of tools. It's like, yes, it's like saying tool. There's a yeah, 100 different versions of it in a whole variety of different contexts as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not, I'm always worried about being reductive. No, I do. I'm not suggesting that you are, but it's it's a complicated suite of tools that we, I'd say, is in certainly in the education profession, but in across pretty much every profession, must grapple with and get our heads around.
Yeah.
And I suppose maybe we're best placed to lead that, perhaps, because maybe we can get people from a variety of different disciplines and different hats on to view things through different lenses, rather than just a technological lens, which is maybe where I might necessarily come from. But that's the last thing we want, because that's how we end up with, you know, African Nazis or whatever it is, because those biases end up back in the box. And that's no offence to Google, they didn't purposely put that there. That's just what happens with unintended consequences of how you tweak these things.
But even just coming back to that for a second, Robin, I think that's like what has been striking to me is that the real value in generative AI is when you are a subject matter expert already, because then tell. You know, like if you didn't know there weren't African Nazis, then those images would probably look fine.
This is the whole thing. You have to have an internal.
You know, you might remember that we done an exercise some time back where we were getting us to generate a list of universities in Ireland, and it looked really right.
Yeah.
Except for the University of Tala that had 12,000 students, and you know, only for the fact that we knew that such a place didn't exist.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not going to have any jokes about Tala people now.
No, absolutely not.
No. But even if it is the south,
that's the south side. Yeah.
But that's actually a good point. I'm like, one person I was describing, or I was discussing with, and he made a good point that there's you can remove the cognitive load or the learning load. And he was saying, I've no problem with removing the cognitive load. And one of the papers that we had in the special issue, the topic picked by the author was the subject of his master's thesis. So he had done the learning, so he was able to evaluate the quality of the output.
Yeah, yeah.
But had he not done his master's in that topic, he would have just accepted whatever was coming out. And I think that's, you know, just to back up what Ken is saying. I mean, there's been times there where a lot of people are saying, oh my God, I'm trying to come up with multiple choice questions for my class. And they'll get ChatGPT or whoever to write it. But they know the stuff. They've made it. It's just taking the drudgery of trying to come up. Because you ask a lot of lecturers, they come up with 10 questions handy enough, but the next 10, 20 becomes more difficult. So,
yeah. Excellent. I'd like to move on, Tom, to talking about something you mentioned at the start about the GASTA and the GASTA Master, right? Mm-hmm. So, first off, maybe you might explain what GASTA is. And then we'll go from there.
Okay.
Because I think this is a very valuable role in the world of research and research dissemination, research communication. So could you explain what GASTA is and where it came from?
Okay, so GASTA, it's the Irish word for like quick, fast and stuff like that. So a number of years ago in IT Tralee, as we were, we put in a bid to host the EdTech conference. And as part of the proposal, you know, they were saying, do you have any ideas? And I have been sick and tired of being at research conferences and you're sitting there and whether you're given 10 minutes or 15 minutes and someone else is going ahead of you. There was one time I was doing, I was presenting up in Trinity, and I was really, really pleased to be doing it from my work. And everybody had gone over. So instead of me starting at 1:45, it was now 1:06. And I knew we were breaking for lunch and I could see people were
hungry,
so hungry and wanted to move and they were squirming around. So I stood up and said, look, there's no problem. Here's my notes on slide chair. Thank you very much. And the chair went, didn't know what to do. And he came up and said, but you were a lousy chair. You were absolutely, you should have shut people up.
Yeah.
So the Gosta, as I said, it's a lightning talk. It's 5 minutes. But I want plenty of, 1 5-minute will mean 5 minutes. And I also like audience participation. So the idea is, and a lot of people, they go to a research conference, sign up and say, oh, it's a lightning talk. And then they stray over. You don't do it with that. So I will get the whole crowd to count down Askailge. And then shout Gosta. Once we shout Gosta, you have 5 minutes to go. With 10 seconds to go, I'll stand up beside you. And when the 5 minutes is up, I will get the crowd to count down and we shout Stod. But there is a serious thing to it. What I do, and I always invite at the start of the Gosta session, I will say, look, someone is here, they're going to give a shout out. It could be crowdsourcing for potential participants. It could be looking for potential collaborators. It's a shout out. As I said, anybody can waffle on. What I say to people, if you're going to do a Gosta, you're doing your research or something there, what's the 3 points? Say I woke you up at 3 o'clock in the morning. What are the 2 or 3 points? I don't need loads of tables or I don't need lots of text. Distill it down. You've been living this research for a couple of years in potential. It's your chance to give a shout out. So there is, it is a seriousness to it about in terms of disseminating your message. But there's too much pomposity in conferences. I have got some very eminent professors and I have actually told them to stop after their 5 minutes and they've had the crack. Because if you sign up for a Gosta, you are given permission that Tom is going to say, yeah. I'm actually going to Galway, actually tomorrow for the SESI conference. And they'll often, conference organisers will often have me towards the end of the day when people are feeling a bit, a bit low and a bit. But there is a serious thing to it because people have worked hard. But as I said, anybody can waffle on for 15, 20 minutes. So I've done it in Canada and Scotland, England, yeah.
No, I'll be interested to hear how it goes, right? Because, okay, and this is, again, we're talking about, I was saying earlier about not trying to be reductive, but maybe I'm being reductive by this statement. But in Ireland, we're quite used to kind of taking the mick out of each other and most people get on with it, okay?
Yeah.
It's part of the cultural kind of background.
Yeah.
How, so, and that's one of the things in the Gosta, I've obviously been at a number of Gosta presentations, I've done them as well. And there is a bit of crack associated. Like if you see Tom coming up beside you, you're like, oh, Jesus, I need to shut up now.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a bit of crack in you. And then you have a jeer with your mate who went over or et cetera, et cetera. And we'll give a shout out to our colleague, our former colleague, Colm Dunphy, who is a divot for that. Right. But how does that translate culturally to elsewhere? So you mentioned Canada.
Yeah.
How did that go down in Canada?
When I was first asked, my first one I'd done outside of Ireland was in the UK in Manchester, in the university there. And when I was asked, and the people who asked me had been to Gosta, and I was saying, I don't know, will this transfer?
Yeah.
But you know, I think the sheer enthusiasm, I have a video where we explain how to count down in Irish, thanks to Ken's late wife. Thanks to Ken's late wife. And so I think it's getting them to build up to it. It's got to such a good brand now is that I was doing a Gosta conference in Inverness last April, but we had about 30% of them were North Americans and they had heard about Gosta and they were going, oh my God, I want to do a Gosta, a Tom Farley Gosta, because some people have picked up on the Gostas abroad. But they were saying they wanted a real Tom Farley Gosta. So I think that was the thing. So, but I'm getting to a stage now where people want to do the Gosta. So they're already pumped. You know, the audience is, but you have to work hard at it. It's about warming the crowd up.
It's like what you said at the start. I wrote you a long letter because I didn't have time to write a short letter. But it is, because it's about being focused, about maybe how can I communicate one idea in five minutes without all the waffle.
One thing I've started to do though, when I'm doing Gostas now, is I have kind of a standard email that I send to the organisers that they give to the Gosta people, the Gostateers as they call them, not presenters. And I think that sort of gives them a sense like that, you know, it's particularly if they've never done or seen a Gosta, they signed up for it, they think it's a standard lightning talk. So, but I think preparation and warming up the crowd and everybody knowing, but yeah, it's a good brand now at this stage, so it's sort of selling itself.
I was going to add in there, Tom, that And it does seem like a distant memory now, but we did during the pandemic have Gas to Goes Global, which was, we done it 2 years in a row. It was online. And the format translated relatively well online. All the recordings are still there at gasta.me, and you can get an introduction to the format there. This is the part of the podcast where I feel like I've very little to add, because Gasta really is the Tom Farrelly show. And I don't know that it would work if it wasn't Tom. So, yeah, I think part of the delight of the Gasta format is you can't take yourself too seriously.
Yeah.
And you know, you need to be prepared to be cut short if you can't do it in 5 minutes. And no better man than Tom.
Has anyone done Gasta without where you haven't been?
Yes. Yeah,
okay. And,
yeah.
And did you get any feedback from it?
Yes.
Okay, go on.
The person might be listening. But yeah, it's, yeah, okay.
Suboptimal, I think, is the word you're
Yes, I think that's probably, yeah, suboptimal. Yeah, I think that's the thing where I don't know. I got an email a few years ago from somebody in a, I won't name the government department, and I presume that this person wasn't very senior and had been tasked to organise a big enterprise day. And I actually rang him and I said, I'll send you a link. And he watched the video and he says, yes, perhaps, perhaps not. All these captains of industry mightn't go down too well. But no, I that's the thing there where, but I'd be happy, like if someone wanted to do a Gasta, I'd be happy to sort of chat them through. But one thing I'd say, you have to commit to it. I mean, otherwise it's not. But having said that, it's gone down really well. I get asked to all, as I said, I've been asked back up to Galway again tomorrow. It is a seriousness thing to it there, like that. But, you know, it's a chance. And like a few people have emailed me back and they said, do you know what? I done a Gasta and I did get potential participants. I did get collaborators. So, you know, and I really make that a big point. And that's the thing when I say, when I send that email, I say, you know, have a QR code, have something there because you've gone to this bond. And I really do think it's a real skill to put together a PowerPoint presentation, much as it kills me. But Ken does brilliant PowerPoint presentations for Gasta.
Is that the worst insult you ever got? you do great PowerPoint presentations.
The expression damned by faint praise comes to mind. But no, I did speak at the one and only Gasta that I submitted, that I succumbed to or submitted myself to. Was at EdTech in
Carlow.
Yeah, I was at that. Yeah.
And I took great delight in finishing within the 5 minutes because I knew that Tom had the knives sharpened extra sharp that particular day. It is a fixed, I suppose, a fixed fixture of ILTA EdTech now at this stage. And ILTA EdTech this year is on in Sligo on the 30th and 31st of May. Just getting the plug in for that one as the president of Vice, or vice president as they call it. And yeah, it's a fixed. It's a fixture there. Is it in OER as well, Tom?
OER, yeah. So yeah, so I don't know if we talk or can.
Sure. Well, I'm conscious of time.
Yeah.
So what we'll do is, I'll put in an edit point, and we'll just go. So it's as if you were picking up from what Ken just said there. So I don't know if we'll talk. Okay. Yeah. So I'll just put in an edit.
Yeah. Well, speaking about OER, yeah. So MTU. Cork, we're hosting a conference. The Association of Learning Technology, which would be the main UK organisation for learning technology, they have a sort of or a sister conference, if you wish, OER 24 this year. It's about open education. Well, it's more than open education resources. It's about open education practice. Still a few seats left if people want to come. The last Wednesday in Torsey, I can't remember the dates now, the last Wednesday in Torsey in March. But no, it's about a commitment to open education, open pedagogy. And I think the Gasta suits well because it's also about being open to, you know, being timed and open to, as I said, I mean, it's the one thing about me, I don't care if you were the president of a university or, you know, a first year postgrad student, I treat everybody the same. But yeah, so OER 24. So, yeah, I suppose Gasta is certainly getting a good run. And thanks, Ken, for reminding me that the Gasta goes global, which, you know, was a huge team effort, including Ken. So Gasta ME, if you're looking for that.
I'm thinking about the value of communicating somebody's research in a short burst. And there was a recent event here from SETU, what they called a chat PhD, which I wasn't at now. I was actually at something else that night. Otherwise, I would have gone. It was in Downs's, which is a pub in Waterford. And they had a whole bunch of PhD students. And it was like, again, the idea of can you talk about your research in a couple of minutes and explain what you're doing? And it's like that thing about writing is thinking.
Yeah.
You know, when you might have an idea in your head, but until you get it on the page or you try and articulate it or verbally,
it's a cognitive act, yeah.
Yeah, that's when you gather your thoughts. And I think having that short format is good because, again, it forces you to focus. So GASA, I mean, I'd love to see it as a format go well. Mm. I was at a conference last year, and again, I think it works well at the latter part of the day.
Yes.
Because people are tired and suddenly you get this bit of crack, there's a bit of fun in it. I think it would, at the conference I was at, it would have been lovely to have that at the end of the first day. You know, I think it would have sat very, very well into proceedings. So I might steal your idea. But don't worry, I'll give you credit for it.
Oh, that's all I want.
No, it's OER'd.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Right, I've one last question for each of you. And this is a question I ask everyone who comes on this podcast. So imagine somebody was listening to this, is a new or perhaps an aspiring researcher, somebody who's maybe looking at getting into things. Would you have one bit of advice for them?
Well, that's a good question. No. I think for me, I lecture in research methods and I supervise people, and I often start off and I say to people, what's research? And they come up with, it is a systematic study of blah, 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 blah. I say, no, it's a question. You have a question, you want to answer it. So don't underestimate yourself. I think sometimes people think, oh, I couldn't do research. I think people, particularly from, say, the strong practitioner background and stuff. So I would say to them, pick something, one that you're passionate about. You know, depending if you're doing, a master's by research or a PhD or something, you're going to be living with this for a few years. So pick something that fires you up. But don't underestimate yourself. This is not false modesty. I am not Dr. Farrelly because I'm super clever, and I genuinely mean it. I'm obviously reasonably clever. I got it because I just stuck with it, and you build something and build something and build something and work, and then one day it's finished and you've done it and you've made your contribution. So yeah, that would be my point.
And Ken?
God, I feel hopelessly unqualified to answer that question. Not being the sort of serious researcher that Dr. Farrelly here is.
Okay, but from your context previously with CTEL or with AntuTutor, is there any kind of common thing? Do you think, God, I've seen this issue crop up with students the whole time?
I think being curious helps, right? But also I think, research doesn't have to be about the big question. Small questions need to be answered too. And as a matter of fact, part of my difficulty with research has been I generally tend to start with too big a question and it gets too broad. I'd love to have that narrow focus where I can ask maybe to put it in business terms, that minimum viable product. So whatever the minimum viable question is, I don't know what that is. Whether that's
point.
Been
it's a good point.
Whether that's been coined yet, but maybe that's it. Keep it tight.
Well, actually, you know what they say about PhD. It's someone who knows more and more about less and less.
Excellent. To Tom Farrelly and Ken McCarthy, thank you very much for your time. I'm going to include a lot of the things that we've mentioned in the show notes. So if there's anything you want to follow up on about GASTA, about AntuTutor, about Tom's recent paper, conferences, things like that, they'll all be there. And also links to where you can find both of you. And also include a link to your Twitter/X profile, where there's a whole load of videos and stuff from you of AntuTutor on track as well, Tom. And Ken, you're even in some of those photos.
I'm very photogenic. I have a face for radio.
Well, Ken reckons he's the younger, better looking version of me.
Was your wife said that to him? Yeah.
Lads, thanks very much.
Thanks Rob.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 9 Plus. Feel free to dig through the back catalogue to find more interesting conversations. Until the next one, Shlán.